All right, this is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. We have a special show for you, celebrating International Revolutionary May Day. So I'll talk more about this in a minute. At the back end of the show, I'll be talking with Raymond Latta about Biden's climate summit chicanery, poisoning the planet and deceiving the people. So you don't want to miss that one. I know all you people out there always telling me about they're deceiving us. It's true. They are. All right. And this is really important for people to check into this. And before that, we'll hear from Andy Z and Michelle Chai on International Revolutionary May 1st and what people were doing about it, what it is, what people were doing about it, where's it going, all this. So don't miss that. All right. Now, the segment on the RevCom's plans for May Day was recorded before May 1st, but May Day was the beginning of a month and a half of events, which will lead to nationwide militant mass demonstrations boldly declaring the need for revolution, nothing less, on June 12th. And opening the show up, I'm very happy to be welcoming back to the show Marjorie Cohn. It's been a while, and I really have missed talking with her, and we'll be talking today about a report of the International Commission on Inquiry on Systemic Racist Police Violence Against People of African Descent in the United States. And this is somebody I had interviewed a number of times, many times, over the... I was just thinking, I've been doing this show, I think, for 20 years, and I remember this person talking with this person over part of that time, and understanding that you know, basically coming to the conclusion that this was someone who really cared a hell of a lot about people and who paid a lot of attention to what was going on in the world and the need to change it. And so what I'm going to tell you now is I'm going to give you an introduction to it so you can understand what we're talking about, okay? On April 27th, the International Commission of Inquiry on Systemic Racist Police Violence Against the People of African Descent in the United States issued its long-awaited report on the U.S.'s police-perpetrated racist violence. The commissioners concluded that the systemic police killings of black people in the U.S. constitutes a prima facie case of crimes against humanity, and they asked the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, to initiate an investigation of responsible police officials. And I was so happy to see this person's name pop up right away on this, because it says next, when I was first reading about this, here to talk with us about all this is Marjorie Cohn. Marjorie is a professor emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, a former president of the National Lawyers Guild, and among many other things, Marjorie is also the Deputy Secretary General of the International Association of Democratic Lawyers. Marjorie is also the author of Drones and Targeted Killing, Legal, Moral, Geopolitical Issues. So let's just jump into this. Marjorie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Yeah, good to hear your voice again, too.
good to hear yours.
Let's jump into this right away. You have an international court making a powerful stand against one of the most dangerous and murderous governments in the world and calling it out for crimes against humanity and in particular against black people. What's going on here?
Well, the commission, which was composed of 12 commissioners, eminent experts and jurists from Asia, Africa, Latin America, Europe, and the Caribbean, spent several months doing extensive research and holding 18 days of hearings in about the police killings of 43 black people and the paralyzing of another. And all of those victims were unarmed or not threatening the officers or others. And in this report, this 188-page report, the commissioners found that there is a prima facie case, which basically means probable cause, to believe that there are crimes against humanity under the International Criminal Court's Rome Statute. And those crimes include murder, severe deprivation of physical liberty, torture, persecution of people of African descent, and inhumane acts causing great suffering or serious injury to body or mental or physical health. And all of the crimes occurred in the context of a widespread or systematic attack directed against the civilian population of black people in the United States, as documented by the extensive findings of fact in this report. And the commissioners asked the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court to launch a formal investigation into these crimes against humanity.
You know, one of the things that really struck me, though, as I was reading about this and reading the stuff that you've written about it, you know, this whole idea of basically this widespread and systemic attack against black people, which is, you know, and it's sort of a way that things have been gotten away with, you know, where it's sort of to the side and all this other stuff. But you make the point, and you never back off of this, that this actually what's going on is what you've been talking about, but also very much it's an attack on black people as human beings. And this is something I thought was really important in what you were getting at in the course of what you're, you know, writing and reading.
Yes, that's true. And the findings of fact really go to that point that you just made. Pretextual traffic stops, where black people are the victims of racial profiling. And these pretextual traffic stops are a common precursor to police killings of black people. And they are lawful under Supreme Court precedent, as long as there is probable cause to believe that someone has an expired registration tag, for example, like Dante Wright, or a traffic violation where Tavis Crane's young daughter threw a piece of candy out the window. That leads, in many, many cases, to police harassment and ultimately excessive force and killing of black people. And then we have the stop and frisk doctrine, where the Supreme Court said, oh, you don't need probable cause, just reasonable suspicion. That's a reduced standard to stop someone on the street and frisk them. And this is used against black people, and it often leads to their deaths, such as Eric Garner, who was suspected of selling individual untaxed cigarettes, and George Floyd, who was suspected of using a counterfeit $20 bill. Then there are Fourth Amendment violations, which invariably lead to the killings of black people. Breonna Taylor was killed following the execution of a no-knock warrant after the judge had replaced it with a knock warrant. And so they just barged in, guns drawn, and she died in her bed. And then police routinely use excessive and lethal restraints against black people, and that includes tasers, chokeholds, compression asphyxia, and rough rides, as well as the use of cars and vehicles as deadly weapons. George Floyd died from asphyxia. Freddie Gray was taken on a 45-minute rough ride, resulting in his death. And then lethal police violence against black people is exacerbated by the officer's failure to provide medical attention. We saw this in the George Floyd case. Another example is Andrew Kearse, who was kept in the back of a squad car for 15 minutes as he begged for help. Please open the window. I can't breathe. And he died of a heart attack in the car. And then we saw many cases where lethal police violence against black people experiencing mental health crises led to their killing by police. Daniel Prude is an example. He had suffered from mental health issues. His family called the police to help him, and he was walking naked down the street. The officers put a spit hood over his head after he began spitting. They held him face down on the pavement for 2 minutes and 15 seconds, and then he stopped breathing. Cis and transgender black women, girls, and femme are disproportionately killed by police in the United States. A friend of Kayla Moore, a mentally ill transgender woman, called for mental health assistance for Ms. Moore, and officers found a warrant for someone with Kayla Moore's birth name, even though it was for somebody 20 years older. So they arrested her, threw her face down on a futon to handcuff her, and she died of asphyxiation. And then, to add insult to injury, they made disparaging comments about her gendered identity after they had killed her. And then systemic racist police violence kills and traumatizes black children and youth. 12-year-old Tamir Rice was shot to death by police as he played in a park with a toy gun. And the young children of Jacob Blake witnessed their father being shot and paralyzed by police. Racist police violence traumatizes and devastates families and community. A family friend of Manuel Elijah Ellis, who was hit, punched, choked, and tasered to death by police, testified at one of the hearings before the commissioners, "We are traumatized. We live in a constant state of PTSD. We are hypervigilant. We are fearful. We are anxious. We are depressed. and it has lasting echoes throughout generations. And black people are so afraid of being killed by the police, they don't call the police when they really need help. Black immigrants are particularly vulnerable to systemic racist police violence and police killings. Botham John, who was from St. Lucia, was eating ice cream in his apartment when an officer walked in, mistakenly thinking it was hers, and shot him dead. And Botham John's mother asked, what was she defending? The only weapon he held was the color of his skin. And then the final finding, which has some subparts, is that legal actors are complicit in police violence and killings of black people through qualified immunity and systemic impunity of officers. Police officers are rarely held accountable for killing black people. Derek Chauvin was the exception, not because he's a bad apple, because the entire tree is rotten, and that's what this report is all about, but because a courageous 18-year-old girl videotaped the 9 minutes and 29 seconds that Derek Chauvin tortured and choked George Floyd to death, leading to massive uprisings all over the world, and they had to charge Chauvin, and the jury ultimately, fortunately, convicted him. But there's only 1% of the cases, in only 1% of the cases, are officers even charged with a crime. 1% of the cases where they kill people, and the commissioners found an alarming pattern of destruction and manipulation of evidence, cover-ups, and obstruction of justice, where prosecutors have a conflict of interest because they rely on the police to make their cases, and so they rarely go against the police. If they do, if there is a high-profile case and they take it to the grand jury, they sabotage the case so the grand jury does not return an indictment. After Darren Wilson killed Michael Brown, as he raised his hands saying, "Don't shoot," then Wilson bagged his own gun and washed Brown's blood off his hands. And after police killed Henry Glover, the officers burned the car with his body in it, covering up, destroying evidence, prosecutorial misconduct, and grand jury abuse. The offending officers testified at the grand juries in the killings of both Michael Brown and Tamir Rice, and in neither case was the officer cross-examined, and there were no indictments in either case. Systemic impunity and lack of oversight of the police is another finding of the commissioner's internal affairs investigations invariably exonerate officers because police can't be trusted to police themselves. And the blue wall of silence keeps officers from reporting misconduct by fellow officers. We saw three other officers aiding and abetting Derek Chauvin in torturing George Floyd to death. They will come to trial in August. Daniel Prude was killed, and the police union got the body camera footage a few days later, but it took the Prude family 6 months to get it, and only after they filed several lawsuits. The police unions facilitate the impunity of officers. They help them to cover up and concoct false narratives. And then finally, qualified immunity, which creates an extraordinary obstacle to holding officers accountable for the killings of black people. And a recent U.S. District Court judge wrote that qualified immunity in real life operates like absolute immunity. So these were the findings in there. There's much more extensive, but these are the main findings of these commissioners in this report of the commission.
You know, it's, as I'm sitting here and I'm listening to this, and I'm just thinking, even having read it and studied it in preparation for us talking today, you know, it still never ceases to just blow me away to hear the kinds of things that you're talking about and what I was reading about before that people have to recognize. And I think that not enough people do, or they turn their head away from it, that these are actually crimes against humanity. You know, and you look at you make a point in the work you have done that there's people from this country, but also people from around the world who understand what the dynamic is, that there's black people who are now being, you know, treated as much as they were just as their ancestors were treated when they were hauled off of African land and thrown into the bottom of a boat and then sent to slavery and worked until they died. This is the same kind of dynamic that's going on now, and people aren't paying enough damn attention to it. These are crimes against humanity.
That's true, Michael. And in the first part of the report, there's an important history tracing the violence against police violence against black people today back to the genesis of this country built on slavery of African people and genocide of indigenous peoples, and it talks about the slave codes and the black codes and Jim Crow all the way up to the present, and that's an important history and context for what we see today and what continues to go on. From this whole thing about it's just a few bad apples, Colette Flanagan, who was the founder of Mothers Against Police Brutality, whose son Clinton Allen was murdered by police, also testified before the commissioners. And at the press conference launching the report, she disabused this notion of a few bad apples, and she said, quote, "We are into orchards of bad apples with trees that have diseased roots, tainted with racism and white supremacy, and they are bearing rotten fruit." And indeed, from March 29th, which was the day the trial of Derek Chauvin for killing George Floyd began, through April 18th, at least 64 people in the United States died at the hands of law enforcement. More than half of the victims were black or brown.
You know, and the kinds of things that they do, the things that they're setting people up with, is, you know, all the violations of human rights, the fact that, as you've mentioned, some of these things about both U.S. laws and police practices don't comply at all with international standards of the use of force, or the Supreme Court's jurisprudence allowing police officers to use deadly force if they have a probable cause to believe the suspect committed a past crime, as you mentioned. All of these things are just like, you know, if you were to sit there and somebody was to be just sort of casually talking with you and threw this out to you, I don't think many people would find it very hard to believe this. And that's the problem, is that it's not just believable, it's happening. And people need to actually dig into this, that this is something that cannot be allowed to just sit there quiet and still and hidden under whatever kind of coat is thrown over it. It's a tremendous hurt for me, because I have to get, you know, moving on the show, because we got a jam. But I want to hear your comments on that and on that comment. But then I also want to invite you back very soon to finish this and to dig deeper into it, because I've always enjoyed talking with you, and I think that work you've done here has been exceptional. So have any words you want to throw at us now?
Yes. I just want to say that we see on an almost daily basis the police murders of black people. It just continues unabated. And it's important that we put into context that these are not just isolated bad apples. They're not isolated events. They are part of systemic racist police violence, and that's what this report does. And I urge people to go to Inquiry Commission, the website, for just type in Inquiry Commission, and you will find the International Commission of Inquiry on Systemic Racist Police Violence against People of African Descent in the United States, and that will lead you straight to the report and also the hearings. In many of these cases that people have heard of and cases that people have not heard of. And so I urge people to read that report. And you can click on it's a long report, but you can click on the sections that are pertinent. And then there were recommendations made to many entities, including to the U.S. executive branch and the U.S. Congress. And the commissioners recommended several reforms, as well as passage of the BREATHE Act, which is aimed at divesting federal resources from policing and investing instead in new approaches to community safety.
Mm-hmm. All right, Marjorie, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike.
Yeah, and let's definitely stay in touch, and let's follow this through on whatever else you're bringing out, because I've always enjoyed reading your work and talking with you about it, and it makes people think and decide they have to do one way or another. And you call people to stand for righteousness and justice, and I think we need a lot more of that. So let's stay in touch this time, all right?
Thanks so much, Michael.
Sure, Marjorie. Talk to you later. All right, you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Marjorie Cohn, who is a professor emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, former president of the National Lawyers Guild, deputy secretary general of the International Association of Democratic Lawyers, and a member of the Advisory Board of Veterans for Peace. Her most recent book is Drones and Targeted Killing, Legal, Moral, and Geopolitical Issues. And if you want to find the piece that we've just been talking about, you can find that. Just basically Google for it. You can just look her up, Marjorie Cohn, okay? And she does some very important work. And that's spelled M-A-R-J-O-R-I-E-C-O-H-N. And we'll be talking with her a lot more. All right, now, I want to take a quick musical break, all right? And then we'll be right back, so stay tuned. Now, if you know me, you know I was having a very difficult time stopping that song, okay? And because I just love music, and that's the kind of music I really love, okay? Now, we have Andy, and we will soon have Michelle. We're talking, we're having a few problems here reaching her, but I want to start with Andy. Andy, how you doing, man?
Oh, Michael, I'm doing good. I'm good.
Okay. Fine.
I'm,
why?
I don't know if I'm good, man. I guess I could say I'm bad, but whatever, man. I'm excited because we're approaching Revolutionary Internationalist May Day, a revolutionary holiday, man. I just, man, we need revolution so bad. It just breaks your heart that we're having to put up with this stuff I'm watching myself.
I know.
I'm not cursing. Okay. almost went there, but I'm just so sick of putting up with this, killing people. You know, the youth are telling us in the streets that they're just hunting the youth down like animals. You know, the day before the conviction of George Floyd's murderer, Derek Chauvin, up in Alameda County, they killed and suffocated the same damn thing to Mariel Gonzalez in Alameda County, by the sheriff. This has got to stop. And you know, and this is just this is what this system does. You're not going to get these pigs to behave themselves or any amount of training. We need a different system where there aren't these cops running around. There aren't these cops running around trying to serve and protect this capitalist imperialist system, but where the people themselves are running this society in a new kind of society that's based on the needs of the people to overcome all forms of oppression. That's what I'm about. That's what my show, The Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube, is about. That's what Bob Vakian, the leader I follow, is about. That we got to do this, and the time is way past when we should do it. And there's a chance we can get going on this now, that where we could actually make a revolution. So this is, I'm excited, man. I kind of couldn't even wait to start talking about it.
Well, I'm glad. And right now, Michelle is on the line, and she's waiting to talk too. Michelle, how you doing?
Hey, Michael, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm anxious. I'm angry. I'm anxious. I'm ready to go. And I don't know, man. Just I'm doing good. So let's talk about you, what you're doing, why you're here, what you're doing, what you're talking about. What are you going to be doing over the weekend?
Yeah, so I think just to bounce off of what Andy was saying, you know, just the situation in the world and how outrageous it is, you know. We're out, you know, every day out in different parts of the neighborhood in Los Angeles, you know, really inviting people and really struggling with people around. If you want to see a different world, if you're tired of, you know, living in a world where people are treated as less than human, if you want to see this whole world just be completely changed, then, you know, come to Revolutionary Internationalist May Day celebration, you know, here in Los Angeles and across the country, you know, and people are really feeling the message. You know, people are, you know, I think as Andy was saying, you know, people are expressing themselves, you know, really saying like they're hunting us down, you know, like this is, you know, I think it really captured, you know, the sentiment when Derek Chauvin was actually convicted, and they couldn't even deliver that verdict without murdering a 15 or 16 year old young woman, you know, and then within 24 hours, I think the numbers were where like 6 people were killed by the police, you know, they have no answers. They have no solutions. They're going to continue to murder and hunt us down, and it can get much worse. And we have to put an end to this. You know, we need a revolution, nothing less. And that's what we're getting organized for. That's what Revolutionary Internationalist May Day is going to be about. You know, our responsibility here in the U.S. at the belly of the beast to bring down this whole system and inspire people all over the world for, you know, to see that we don't have to live this way. You know, there is a whole other way that the world can be, you know, for the emancipation of all humanity.
Now, I'll ask you this first and then throw it to Andy after that. I want to talk to you about this. You know, the announcement for this event says, let's get down to basics. We need a revolution, nothing less. Let's talk about what you mean about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some of what I was speaking to, you know, there's no solution to, you know, murder by police, the destruction of the environment and the planet, the oppression of women, to name just a few things under the system. You know, there's no reforming, you know, any of this under the current system, or just trying to pass laws, or just trying to, you know, get brown faces in higher places. Like, there is not going to deal with the root of the problem, you know. And Bob Avakian, you know, which, you know, very importantly, you play a lot of in your show, and we are followers of, and we call on other people to be followers of too, is, you know, has actually done the work to really get to the root of, you know, where all this comes from, the system of capitalism, imperialism, and the fact that we have to actually uproot, abolish, and replace that system. And that's going to take an actual revolution, nothing less, you know. And that's what we're, again, preparing for. That's what we're organizing people around, you know. And at this point, we don't need everybody, but we are actually bringing forward those people that really care, those people that are agonizing, that want to see an end to this, and, you know, that are ready and are, you know, through struggle, getting, you know, stepping into the revolution in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Now, Andy, you know, I wanted to hear what you had to say about this as well. You know, this whole announcement says, let's get down to basics, as we've been talking about. We need a revolution, nothing less. It also, in the title for this, the celebration is, we are human beings and we refuse to accept slavery in any form. How have people been responding to that?
Well, I'm glad you raised that, Michael. I think it's very important. Michelle made an important point. Look, it's the system that we live under that destroys lives and crushes spirits. It's the source of all the horror that we face. And it can't, you know, and I thought you brought that out quite sharply. And there actually is another way the world could be. But it can't get there without actually overthrowing the system. And that's going to take a lot of people. So in going out and saying we are human beings, we refuse to accept slavery in any form. First off, who is the we? Who is the we? The we is the people of the world. And slavery in any form means all the different forms of oppression. All the different forms of oppression need to be overcome. Gender oppression, racial oppression, national oppression, the despoliation and the destruction of the environment, what happens to immigrants, the wars. You know, we begin with, and at the centerpiece of this May 1st, 2021, is a declaration and call to get organized now for a real revolution. And it begins by saying to everyone who can't stand the world the way it is, who is sick and tired of so many people being treated as less than human, who knows that the claim of liberty and justice for all is a cruel lie, who is righteously enraged that injustice and inequality go on and on and on despite false promises and honeyed words from people in power, or those who are seeking power. Everyone who agonizes about where things are headed and the fact that to be young now means to be denied a decent future or any future at all. Everyone who has ever dreamed about something much better or even wondered about whether that is possible. Everyone who hungers for a world without oppression, exploitation, poverty, and the destruction of the environment, everyone who has a heart to fight for something that is really worth fighting for, you need to be a part of this revolution. And this is what it means to say we are human beings. We refuse to accept slavery in any form. And one of the things people will learn if they come is that this revolution is not just a good idea or an aspiration, but it's actually possible if we work for it. And we're living in a very rare moment where the very fact that Biden is going to, as Bob Avakian has said, fail miserably in his attempt to unite the country, because you do have these fascist forces who are arrayed against the normal rules, oppressive, vicious rule against the masses of people, as evidenced at, in one dimension, as Michelle said, by 100 people being killed since this trial went on of Derek Chauvin. The fact that they are so at odds with each other and so fighting each other is going to give a potentially an opportunity for the people to burst through. And actually, if we get organized, if we mobilize thousands now, and as the things continue to sharpen up over the next months and years, we could actually make a revolution and win, and then go to work on overcoming all these different forms of oppression that so plague humanity today. So, yeah, we're raising that slogan, and my understanding is their response to this has been very positive. People do feel degraded. Hunted like animals is the exact opposite of we are declaring we are human beings. It's the precise opposite of it. Destroying the planet so that people are drinking leaded water, are suffering terribly, are mass migrations of 100 million people. I don't want to just throw so many ideas out at folks. But there really is a situation that I think people feel very acutely. There's got to be another way. And there is. And that's what we're bringing. And if you want to find out about it, come there, find out about it, and go to revcom.us to read more about it. Watch we have a special episode up on YouTube at the RevComs of the Revolution Nothing Less show.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to have to rush this along, but and I've got to have you guys back on the show later on, some other time in the near future. But, and especially because of things like what we're talking about right now, about the kinds of things that we're basically people all over the world are being forced in one way or another by the way things are developing to deal with all this stuff. And it's important for people to understand the things that are here. And I have to say, I was really, impressed and moved by basically the flyer that you had put out for this, even a declaration, a call to get organized now for a real revolution. This is, this is something that I think people don't hear enough, don't think it's possible, but you guys and this, this whole, all of us that are around that, we actually do represent something that's important, that's growing, that's real. And is it happening without struggle? No, but it's happening. And it's something that people need to, if you're sick and tired of living in this damn world that just mutilates people, you got to step up and do something. Andy, you have anything else you want to say?
There really is, as the sayings go, there really, saying is gone in the past, there is a world to win. There really is a world to win. We don't have to put up with this. No more band-aids or people taking up the struggle to just get positions for themselves or get some money for this or that thing. The situation is too urgent and oppressive on the one hand, and there's too much possibility for something radically different, and there's actually a plan and a leadership to do this. What we really want to challenge people to do is step into this now. Don't just be there by yourself thinking, man, I hate this, I want something better, all this kind of stuff. Be there, and find out about it. Be with other people. We can talk about it, we can struggle about it, and we can march in the streets and say, no more of what has kept us down. We want a different world, and we're going to fight for that world.
All right, Michelle, you have any anything you want to say before we got to go?
No, I think I just want to echo Andy, and I hope everybody comes. Bring your questions, bring, your anger and your eagerness to see something radically different. Come meet the RevComs. We're getting organized for a revolution. Come find out about the leadership of Baba Vacant, and come meet other people just like you that are coming together, to really see this whole thing be radically transformed. So that's all I'll say.
All right. Thanks a lot. And talk to you both again real soon.
Okay.
Okay. Take care now.
This is the Michael Slate Show, and we've been talking with Andy Z, the host of the Revolution Nothing Less show, which you can find on YouTube, on the YouTube channel, The RevComs. And we've been talking with Michelle Chai of the Los Angeles Revolution Club. We've been talking about May Day, and we need revolution, nothing less. We're going to take a musical break and be right back, so stay tuned. We'll be back with Raymond Latta. Thank you. All right, I should give you the name of that particular number. That was some more of Awakening by Leon Parker. Next, we'll be hearing from Raymond Latta, who recently wrote a piece on RevCom.us, and the piece was Biden's climate summit chicanery, poisoning the planet and deceiving the people. So let's hear the interview. Raymond Latta, welcome to the show, Raymond.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Sure. Now, I'm just going to read this thing that give people a sense of what we're going to be talking about. Biden's climate summit chicanery, poisoning the planet and deceiving the people. What are we talking about, Raymond? I read this over and over, and I kept thinking, he's not deceiving me. Then I found out.
Yeah, well, last week, Thursday, April 22nd, and Friday, Biden convened a climate summit. And this was a global climate summit, and there was a lot of hoopla and hype around it. It was pronounced to be a turning point in combating climate change and lowering carbon emissions, and America was back taking the lead. And in fact, this was not a fundamental change in direction. It was not a fundamental drawdown from a carbon-based economy. And in fact, it is a cruel deception to anyone who cares about the fate of the planet. And I think to really, you know, get at the truth of this, you know, we have to first look at the scale of the climate emergency that humanity is confronting and the culpability of U.S. imperialism in this crisis. And first, look, we're facing a collapse of polar ice sheets, rising sea levels that endanger the populations of countries like Bangladesh. We're facing the prospect of widespread crop failures and more frequent extreme weather events. You know, Andy earlier just mentioned, you know, climate refugees. And right now, you know, 25 to 30 million people, overwhelmingly from the third world, are fleeing drought and floods, the ruin of agriculture. And the UN has forecast that these numbers could skyrocket to the hundreds of millions in the coming two decades. The U.S. bears the greatest culpability for this climate emergency. It is responsible for the greatest cumulative amount of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, greenhouse gases of carbon and methane released by fossil fuel production and consumption, by fracking and carbon-based, oil-based, natural gas-based industry and transport, which traps heat in the atmosphere. The U.S. is the second largest emitter of greenhouse emissions. And the United States uses more fossil fuels per person and produces more carbon pollution per person than any major economy in the world. And the truth of the situation is that fossil fuels have been and remain foundational to the profitable functioning of U.S. capital imperialism, and also to the genocidal military of the U.S., which is the key instrument to maintain U.S. dominance, you know, as the chief exploiter and plunderer in this world imperialist system. And the U.S. military is the single largest institutional consumer of oil. That's the backdrop. So you have that situation, and you have this climate conference with all the hoopla, as I said. And the Biden plan, you know, when you measure that up against this reality and the danger, the existential danger to life systems on this planet, the Biden plan is really a joke. You know, it calls for a 50% reduction in climate emissions by 2030. And this is not nearly enough. You know, it's a drop in the carbon bucket. And it is not only an insufficient declaration, it's an empty promise and pledge. It's not binding. It's not signed into law. And the fact is that all the major capitalist imperialist powers, the major powers of the world, have made all kinds of pledges and promises. The Paris Climate Agreement of 2015, not one of them is on track to meeting those pledges. And then there's even more that shows this to be a sham. when the U.S. calculates its carbon emissions and how they're going to be reduced, it does not include the greenhouse gases that are generated by the global supply chains of U.S. imperialism, by the cheap labor, carbon-intensive, you know, networks of production, you know, in China, Indonesia, Vietnam, Bangladesh, Mexico, Central America, that, you know, produce iPhones and garments and then are shipped back to the U.S. Well, all the carbon emitted by that global cheap labor production that serves the profitability of U.S. imperialism, that's not part of the baseline of carbon emissions that the U.S. is, you know, ostensibly to reduce. So that's just, you know, sort of a basic picture of, you know, what we are facing with this climate crisis and the chicanery, as I said, of this summit and the pledges and promises and all the boasting that was made by Biden. And I do have to say, Michael, I know we have limited time, but one of the most important things for your listening audience to grab hold of and learn more about is that what the Biden administration and the U.S. imperialists are talking about is what's called net zero emissions. By 2050, they're saying America should achieve net zero emissions. And that kind of sounds good, you know, but, and this is in fact a bedrock principle, you know, of the promised reductions. But net zero emissions is not the same as zero emissions. Zero emissions is what it sounds like, and in fact is, no carbon emitted. But net zero emissions, which is what the Biden proposals are predicated on, means that carbon dioxide, greenhouse emissions can continue. That can be pumped into the atmosphere as long as that is based on the promise of removing carbon at a future date. So what that means is carbon can still be pumped into the atmosphere, do its damage, and then the idea of removing carbon to offset that, to equal it, you know, to balance it out, that's what net zero means. That removal is based on unproven and questionable technology to capture carbon in the atmosphere and to store it. And at the same time, this idea of net zero is based on planting trees to absorb carbon. But this, too, is a ruse, because this means that the trees that are being planted, industrial-level plantation trees, are actually threatening native vegetation and biodiversity. So this is a very deceptive and damaging program, net zero emissions. And on the same day as the climate summit, you know, Michael, the day I wrote my article that you're commenting on, and I'm summarizing some of the key points of it, on that very same day, three climate scientists very courageously issued a statement, not on the same day as my article, that's not the courage, but in the face of this climate summit, they issued an article in which they said that net zero emissions is a dangerous trap and a fantasy. And these three scientists were themselves architects of net zero emissions thinking, and they had championed it and popularized it. And they said on Earth Day, oh my God, we have created a Frankenstein. So for all of these reasons, this is why this is a sham. It's not a radical transition away from a fossil fuel-based economy and infrastructure, and it prolongs fossil fuel production and consumption.
Ah, isn't it beautiful to live in America with all the truth and honesty and all this other stuff that's out there? Yeah, okay. You know, this is the thing that we have about maybe a minute here, because I want people to get this. And I little clipped in the beginning, because I want people to know that Raymond Lotta is a revolutionary communist. And I think you're still at Revolution Books as well.
Yeah, I'm a spokesperson for Revolution Books in New York City. I write for RevCom. I'm a political economist and a frequent visitor to your radio show.
That's right. And a hell of a guy to talk with, I'll tell you. Okay. Let me ask you this, because there's all this stuff that's happening. And it's really imperative that people understand that they're not helpless, you know, that there's things that can be done against this. But if you stand back and watch or accept it, it could actually, these things could actually add up to the end of the planet, the end of humanity. I mean, this is not, I'm not trying to be like, you know, someone say, oh, look, he's just a wild man who's saying all this stuff. But these things have real impact on the world and on the lives of people all over the world. I wanted you to just comment on that a little bit. We only have a couple minutes to do it, like 3 or 4 minutes, and then I have to run out. You want to comment on that?
Yeah, just, you know, I would really encourage people to go to revcom.us for coverage of the environmental emergency and the fact that there is a way to actually confront, address, and act on this crisis, mm-hmm. this catastrophic situation that humanity is facing. There is a way to act on this that measures up to the scale of it, and that is we must make a revolution to get rid of this system and to create a society, an economy that can interact with nature in a sustainable way and that can go to work, you know, on reversing this and acting from the standpoint of the interest of humanity. And that's what a socialist revolution, the revolution that is guided by the new communism by Bob Avakian, opens up the possibility and the avenues to unleash all the creativity, the scientific know-how, the determination, the energy of people who want to cope with this and not just adapt to, but to transform, you know, society, the way we live, what we produce, how we produce it, our relationship to nature, becoming caretakers of the planet. That requires a revolution. The new communism developed by Bob Avakian provides the framework to actually address this emergency with the determination, with the scientific approach, and by unleashing people in such a way that we have a chance. There's no guarantee. Everything you said, Michael, is true. This is an existential crisis of that order of seriousness. There's no guarantee, but this is the only way that we can really go at it. So I would encourage people to look at the Constitution for the new Socialist Republic in North America, to look at the RNL show of last week, number 49, where there's a fuller interview with me about this point. Mm-hmm. How would a different, radically different society, you know, actually go to work on this crisis? Mm-hmm. And I want to encourage all the listeners to come out tomorrow to Revolutionary Internationalist May Day. Your previous speakers were talking about the importance of this because, you know, Andy said we have a world to win. We have a world to win and a planet to save. And there is a method, an approach, and a vision to do that. Absolutely. And this is the moment that we're confronting, and I really thank you for having me on.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming on, man, and I really look forward to talking to you again. Right now, I got to rush, though, so thanks a lot, Raymond. And people can find your work at revcom.us, as you pointed out. I think that's this particular piece is there now, I know, and it really, folks, read it. Pick it up, read it, think about it, and we can even talk about it more on the show, so we'll get you back. All right, Raymond, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure, take care now.
Okay, we've got some time left, so I'm going to play a piece from the May 1st celebration I talked about with our guests Andy Z and Michelle Chai. This is Michelle at the celebration, and it's her closing remarks and a challenge to all of us to understand what we're facing and to take the side of humanity in the months that come. It's also a great ending for today's show. So here again is Michelle Chai.
We wanted to end this program with a commemoration for Damian Garcia, who... Damian Garcia, yes, that's right. Damian Garcia was a revolutionary coming for May 1st, 1980, 41 years ago. He climbed on top of the Alamo, tore down the hideous US flag and Texas flag, and instead raised in their place the red flag of revolution, communism, and internationalism. And for this, Damian inspired people all over the world. And just a few weeks later, when he was building for Revolutionary May 1st in housing projects here in Los Angeles, in Pico Aliso, he was killed by someone who shouted, "You hate the government. I am the government. Your flag is red, mine is red, white, and blue." And I want to read an excerpt from Bob Avakian's memoir, which I'm holding up, and you can find here at our book table. And look, I want to say, I've been reading this memoir, and it has brought me tears and a lot of smiles, because you can actually learn and, you know, see who this leader is and how taking out this message and actually meeting all kinds of people, you can see the potential to make revolution and how people actually do come forward in supporting, you know, when they recognize that this is about the people. So I want to read an excerpt from the memoir. So this is Bob Avakian, and he says, "To die in the causes for which the imperialists and reactionaries have and will, on an even more monstrous scale, enlist the people, or to give up living and to die a little death on your knees, or to consume oneself in futile attempts at self-indulgent escape, all this is miserable and disgraceful. But to devote your life, and even willing to lay it down, to put an end to the system that spews all this forth, to live and die for the cause of the international proletariat, to make revolution, transform society, and advance mankind to the bright dawn of communism. This is truly a living and dying that is full of meaning and inspiration for millions and hundreds of millions fighting for or awakening to the same goal all around the world. Such was the life and death of Comrade Damian Garcia, a fighter and martyr in the army of the international proletariat." So look, in closing, I want to say, look, we're heading into very heavy times, you know? And you can read and you can, and we should keep talking about what this means, right? But in the declaration, it makes the point that there's two sides, you know, in the people in power that are, there's very sharp, you know, fight amongst them, you know, and how to rule. And we saw an expression of that on January 6th at the Capitol. And look, whether people are paying attention to this or whether people are beginning to lift their sights, there's no getting away from this. And there's either gonna be a revolutionary resolution to this or a reactionary resolution to this. And we're not gonna lie, you know, we're not gonna sit here and lie that there's gonna be no sacrifice. And what Bob Avakian was actually talking about, to live and to fight for the people and the recognition that your life can actually be about putting an end to this. Not to just think about yourself or to try to get by while millions of people are being grounded up in this system is a very beautiful and important thing. And I don't just want to speak to that side of it. I also want to speak to the joy of it, because there is a lot of joy. And to go back to what I was saying earlier, even looking around and seeing the kinds of people that you're with, having each other's back, getting into these questions deeper, lifting our sights together to a whole different world. As Bob Avakian says, a whole different world where mothers don't have to bury their children anymore because a thug in a badge shot them and murdered them. A world where women can walk down the street and look every man in the eye and fear nothing. To women that know what it's like to walk around having to turn and look behind them every single second. Can't even begin to imagine getting to that kind of world. But that world is possible. And this is why we are here together, to learn more about this, to step into this, and to let other people know. You know, and the joy of seeing, you know, even earlier, these people that stood here and read those points of attention for the revolution, struggling together, looking at people actually getting a sense of those points of attention and striving to actually represent and live by those points of attention. That's a very joyous and beautiful thing. So I wanted to end with that, you know, because there are a lot of challenges ahead, but then when you look at what is actually on our side, the leadership that we do have, the potential to make this revolution is a very liberating thing to have. So thank you all. Let's keep talking. Let's meet each other. Come to the book table. Let's get organized and let's go. Oh, one more thing. I do want to say, and I want to lead everybody in saying together, Damian Garcia presente. Damian Garcia presente.
was Michelle Chai, a member of the Revolution Club in Los Angeles, speaking at the Los Angeles celebration of International Revolutionary May Day.
And that brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to share your thoughts and ideas about the show, or if you want to volunteer to be part of the show, write to me at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com.
I'm listening, I want to hear your thoughts, see it all, like a hit waves through the walls. You want to go out tonight, you want to know what it's like when the wind's in your lungs and the fire is in those eyes.